The headline: Syria calls on Turkey to stop its hostile behavior and end the deadly airstrikes on its territory. Tehran criticizes London for supporting a Saudi-funded television channel that propagates terror and violence in Iran. And also in our headlines, Ukraine is pushing for UN Security Council action against Russian airstrikes targeting its infrastructure. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. It's our top story for this half hour. Syria is strongly critical of Turkey over the recent wave of airstrikes targeting its territory, calling for the deadly operations to be immediately halted.
The current military hostilities are a continuation of Turkey's long-standing hostile behaviors. First, it undermines previous agreements reached between Syria and Turkey, and moreover, it leads to civilian casualties. Neither Syria nor countries in this or any other country will agree with it.
The diplomat said that Syria deems the security of its borders with Turkey as extremely important. He, however, said that such security should be obtained through dialogue and cooperation rather than attacks or incursion. He also called Turkey's airstrikes a breach of both international law and Syria's sovereignty. The deputy minister made the remarks during the 19th summit of the Astana peace process, which aims to find a political solution to the crisis in Syria. Turkey started hitting areas in northeastern Syria 2 years ago, but it has intensified the strikes since last week when an explosion in Istanbul killed six people. Ankara blames the bombing on Kurdish militant groups based in Iraq and Syria. According to the Turkish defense minister, attacks on 500 targets have already killed over 250 militants. Well, Tehran has strongly slammed the UK's support for a London-based Saudi-funded anti-Iran TV channel. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the British Foreign Secretary's claim to taking, quote, the importance of free, honest, and open journalism incredibly seriously was just an empty allegation. He added that the channel supported by James Cleverly is freely propagating terror and violence against the Iranian nation and its national security. Kanani reminded Cleverly that his backing for the Saudi-funded Iran International Channel amounts to supporting the anti-Iran war room. Iran's intelligence ministry has designated Iran International Channel as a terrorist organization over its role in stoking the recent riots in the country. Tehran University professor Sayed Mohammad Marandi says the West-based Persian language media would have been immediately shut down if they were addressing the English-speaking audience as they support spread of violence.
There's no doubt that the Americans and the Europeans are deeply involved in these very violent riots. And we know they're violent because well over 40 police officers and Basij members were murdered by these different rioters. And the United States and the Europeans, if this had happened in their own countries, they wouldn't tolerate any of this. But these rioters are being egged on by Persian language media based in the West, largely in London, funded by the West and the Saudis. And these media outlets are calling the killings and the burnings and the beatings as legitimate. So Ofcom, if this was these were English language media directed towards English-speaking countries, they would shut these television stations down immediately and arrest these people. But when it comes to Iran, it's all fair game.
Tehran says reaching an agreement regarding the revival of the 2015 Iran deal is high on the agenda. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian stresses that the Islamic Republic is insisting on its red line, saying that a deal is quite feasible if Tehran's demands are met. Gisumi Shahadi has more.
Deal or no deal? While the EU is still reluctant to lay its negotiating cards on the table, at a press conference in the capital, Tehran, Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian stressed that Iran's negotiating team is ready for the next round of talks and is waiting for the bloc's foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, to set a date for ministerial-level negotiations.
We have made our stance clear, and in the previous negotiations, we communicated our views regarding the remaining issues. Last week, we announced that we are ready for the next round of talks, and now Mr. Borrell is following up and trying to set a date. Obviously, talk will continue if we make sure that our logical demands are met.
In the words of Hossein Amir Abdullahian, resolving the remaining issues with the IAEA, receiving guarantees on the economic benefits of the deal for Iran, and removing unilateral sanctions are the three key issues that need to be worked out.
The JCPOA revival talks are high on the agenda, and we are adamantly following up on the issue. Of course, this will happen when we make sure that our reasonable demands in line with our national interests are met.
According to the top diplomat, Iran and the U.S. continue to exchange messages. However, American officials take what Amir Abdullahian calls a hypocritical stance while talking to mainstream media by making comments that contradict the messages that they send to Iran.
The International Atomic Energy Agency has always deviated from its technical path and taken a political stance. European and American negotiators had promised that this would not happen again, but they broke their promise yet another time.
These comments come after a recent anti-Iran resolution passed by the IAEA Board of Governors prompted the Islamic Republic to announce that it will begin 60% uranium enrichment in its Fordo nuclear facility. Over the past couple of years, Iran has demonstrated in practice that it is committed to the JCPOA, or the nuclear deal. It has always been the other side that has neglected the agreement. Now, Iran says for these negotiations to reach a final conclusion, it is necessary for the other side to offer some guarantees that it will remain committed to any agreement that is reached. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
Ukraine is pressing the UN Security Council to take action against Russia's airstrikes, which it says have devastated its infrastructure in recent weeks.
We are awaiting a very firm reaction of the world to today's Russian terror, response of our partners, response of our friends, not just observers, but a reaction from all those who really recognize the UN Charter. We're doing everything possible. Ukraine represented a peace formula. The world heard it, 10 items in order to empower the Charter of UN and violated by Russian guarantee security for Ukraine, Europe, and all the peoples of this planet suffering from the consequences of the Russian aggression.
Addressing an urgent meeting of the UN Security Council, Zelensky claimed that in the past 24 hours alone, Russia has fired more than 70 missiles at Ukraine. He said that the airstrikes have affected houses, schools, hospitals, and transportation systems. Moldova's permanent representative to the UN also condemned Russia's attacks on Ukraine, saying the strikes have taken a toll on his country as well. He said more than half of Moldova was left without electricity last week, with some areas still experiencing power outages. Also speaking at the same session was Russia's envoy, who offered Moscow's narrative of the events.
The damage to residential housing and victims among the peaceful population is indeed caused by the Ukrainian air defense systems, which are not located at the outskirts of the cities, but in the very center. As a result, the missiles, those that hit those places which Russia never targeted. So, for example, today, users posted photos on the internet of missiles that hit residential homes in Kiev. Turns out that these were American air defense missiles, which were supplied to Kiev.
The Russian envoy also criticized Kiev and its Western supporters for their threats and ultimatums. Moscow denies carrying out attacks on non-military targets. It has also condemned the West for covering up the crimes of the Ukrainian military in pro-Russia areas. Johnny Miller is joining us now from Donetsk. Johnny, first of all, talk to us about Ukraine's recent requests from the UN Security Council. Also, if you may, give us an update from the situation on the ground as well.
Well, yes, yesterday we saw some of the largest missile strikes by Russia against Ukrainian civil infrastructure, energy infrastructure so far. And frankly, it's bringing Ukraine's energy infrastructure to breaking point. I spoke to a contact in Kiev yesterday. She told me that previous to these strikes, there was only 2 hours of electricity a day for people in Kiev. That was scheduled 2 hours. Then it became random 2 hours, so people didn't know when electricity was going to go on. She told me that because of these strikes today, there is no electricity whatsoever. There is no water. thankfully, heating is still on. Ukrainian winter is very harsh, of course, and if the heating was to go off in Kiev and other cities, it would be difficult to see how civilians would carry on. But these strikes against energy infrastructure is causing huge damage to the ability of Ukraine to be able to look after the basic needs of its people. That's why Zelensky is going to the United Nations and calling for assistance. But it's also important to recognize that while Russia has been striking this energy infrastructure for a month or so now, Ukraine has been hitting civil infrastructure here in Donbass, where I am, intermittently for the last 8 years, and particularly since February this year when Russia invaded. Just last night, at about 11:30, the whistle of missiles flew over my apartment and hit a passport office in the center of Donetsk. Ukraine has been trying to, it's been hitting hospitals, schools, water, electricity in Donbass for many years, particularly over recent months. So frankly, both sides are trying to hit and are succeeding in hitting civil infrastructure. And the only way that both sides are going to stop hitting energy infrastructure is for there to be peace negotiations. But there doesn't seem to be any appetite for that at the moment.
All right, thanks a lot, Johnny Miller, joining us from Donetsk. Elsewhere, UK energy companies will increase gas and electricity prices from January, forcing the government to raise its price cap. Britain's energy regulator, Ofgem, said companies can charge more for energy from next year, but households will be protected from the price hike. Under the Energy Price Guarantee, EPG, the typical household is currently paying £2,500 a year for energy, but Ofgem says that without government support, households would have paid £4,200 from January. The price cap was introduced in October. This comes amid concerns about the cost of the EPG at a time when the government's debt is rising. Analysts at Cornwall Insight have said that capping gas and electricity prices for the next 2 years could cost up to £140 billion. Europe is facing its worst energy crisis in decades due to the fallout from the Ukraine war and the COVID-19 pandemic. EU Home Affairs ministers are set to hold an emergency meeting on Friday to discuss the growing refugee crisis in the 27-nation bloc. This is lawmakers in the European Parliament are critical of the EU's treatment of refugees. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
The recent decision by Italy to close its ports to the Ocean Viking vessel carrying 234 refugees has been slated in the European Parliament. The vessel, operated by a charity, was eventually allowed to dock in France.
How cynical is it that NGOs filling this gap and saving lives are criminalised, whereas the states violating their obligation enjoy impunity?
Asylum applications have increased by 60% in the EU during the past 12 months. That figure is separate from those arriving from Ukraine. In fact, the 27 EU nations are providing maximum support to Ukrainians, while those from other countries are often forced to sleep on the streets.
How dare so many of you define yourself as Christians and repeat that you are defending Christian values when your ideas and your actions are proof of the opposite.
In the Mediterranean alone, 2,000 refugees have drowned so far this year, according to the International Organization for Migration. The message seems to be, if you're not one of the 4 million Ukrainians who have arrived in the EU in recent months, you're not welcome. It's suggested war hawks in the US and NATO don't give a damn about the millions of people who have been displaced through military intervention in countries such as Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Yemen, and Libya. Apparently, the far right is flourishing in the EU due to the bloc's neglect of refugees.
How did Lega get big? How did the AfD get big? How did Marine Le Pen get big? It's all by capitalizing on the fears of migration.
The ascent of the extreme right in the EU is certainly bad news for asylum seekers, according to analysts.
What this is doing is this is leading to a rise in xenophobia. These refugees, these people who, as I said, are at the lowest possible ebb, are now being subject to abuse and to hate crimes.
EU Home Affairs ministers will hold an emergency meeting on the refugee crisis this Friday. There's a great deal of scepticism that anything will be achieved. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Elsewhere, North Korea is reacting angrily to a push by its southern neighbor for additional sanctions on Pyongyang over its missile launches in recent weeks. North Korean leader's sister, Kim Yo-jong, has described the South Korean president and his administration, using her own words, as idiots who are parroting the United States. She's even compared the government and sold to a faithful dog which is owned by Washington. Kim also warned that additional sanctions and pressure would only add to the North's hostility and anger. Meanwhile, the South has called these comments deplorable. Seoul this week announced it was considering fresh unilateral sanctions on the North over its recent missile tests, including an intercontinental ballistic one last week. But the North keeps insisting that the weapons tests are a response to provocations by Seoul and Washington, particularly their massive military drills, which destabilize the peninsula. A fresh strike by South Korean truckers is threatening to disrupt manufacturing and fuel supplies for industries. Unionized truckers are walking out over minimum pay system, which the government has already agreed to extend for 3 more years. But the truckers now want the government to make this scheme permanent. Organizers have warned the strike could stop oil supplies at major refineries and transport at major ports and industrial plants. In response, the government is considering deploying military trucks for urgent transport and securing more storage space in case cargoes pile up. Also, gas station owners have been asked to secure enough inventories ahead of the strike. This is the second major strike by truckers in less than 6 months. China is reporting the highest number of daily COVID cases since the start of the pandemic nearly 3 years ago. According to the Health Bureau, there were more than 31,000 new local infections on Wednesday, minus the imported cases. The number broke the previous record set in April. The government has been working to curb the spread with snap lockdowns, mass testing, and travel restrictions. Under Beijing's zero COVID policy, even small outbreaks can shut down entire cities. But the radical rules have caused public frustration. On Wednesday, hundreds of workers protested at a flagship iPhone plant in Zhengzhou over salaries and conditions. And now the city has ordered a lockdown after the protest, as the number of COVID cases hit a daily record. Residents there can only leave the area with a negative COVID test and permission from local authorities. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Hidden Files.
Around 2 a.m. on the morning of Saturday, November 28, 1953, something rather strange happened at a New York City hotel. A scientist got up in the middle of the night, ran across a dark room, avoiding two beds, and dove through a closed window with the shades and curtains down, then died soon after he hit the ground. His name was Frank Olson, and his death would help uncover a series of secret CIA operations involving the lives of thousands. Hello and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi, and today's mind-blowing topic is a CIA mind control project called MKUltra. The story of MKUltra is at times so surreal that one may think it's the plot of a science fiction movie, but unfortunately, it is very much true and affected thousands of people around the world, although no one is sure of the actual numbers because of the secrecy of the program. It was a Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA, top secret program, which used humans as guinea pigs to test a range of drugs that could force confessions or brainwash individuals through various forms of psychological torture. Well, you see, in the 1950s, the CIA initiated this program to experiment with forms of mind control in order to, and I quote, to catch up with the Soviets and Chinese advances in the field. 80 institutions and 185 private researchers had contracts with the CIA to perform this work, and they were located around the world, as were their victims. So Sidney Gottlieb was the CIA's main man handling this project. He was a chemist, and some of his experiments were covertly funded at universities and research centers. Others were conducted in American prisons and in detention centers in Japan, Germany, and the Philippines. Now, according to journalist Stephen Kenzer, Gottlieb wanted to create a way to seize control of people's minds, and he realized that it was a two-part process. Well, first, you had to blast away, imagine that, blast away the existing mind. Second, you had to find a way to insert a new mind into that resulting void. Well, according to Kenzer, the United States didn't get too far on number two, but they did a lot of work on number one. There were a core group of scientists around the world who were part of MKUltra. LSD, sleep deprivation, and electric shock treatments were their favorite tools to use on their victims, but it was not limited to those. They would induce people into a high with putting them into having hallucinations, then giving them a drug to bring them down, and while in between these phases, some of them would give their victims mini electric shock treatments, basically having people lose their minds. Take a look at this.
This is where I have my effect, in the mind.
This is lysergic acid diethylamide, better known as acid. The powerful drug was first synthesized in 1938 in Switzerland. With a dose of mere micrograms, the mind becomes confused. Perception is distorted. Personal identity is called into question. The results can be euphoric bliss or deadly panic.
So that was how LSD was introduced to this country.
Operation Midnight Climax is part of a larger top-secret CIA program called MKUltra. The goal: learn how to control and even reprogram people's minds. The CIA believes LSD might hold the key. Over the next 10 years, the agency doses a cross-section of the American public. Everyone from unwitting housewives, to soldiers, to even criminals like gangster Whitey Bulger is tested.
You know, what the CIA really dreamed of was sort of like a drug you could give to someone, get them to commit all sorts of unspeakable acts, and they wake up the next day and they don't remember what they've done.
They were looking into brainwashing. They were looking into mind control. They were looking into how they could create what they called Manchurian candidates. They were trying to figure out if they could get people to go out and do things that they would ordinarily not do, like assassinations.
The case of MKUltra has to be one of the craziest cases of blowback in CIA history. Because here they took this drug, LSD, and thought that they were going to be able to use it to control people's minds. And the unbelievable irony is that LSD is a drug that does exactly the opposite. It frees your mind and causes people to question authority.
Turn on, tune in, drop out.
The CIA's attempt to control people turned out to be just the opposite. It created the counterculture, as we know it, of the 60s. It was the CIA that introduced LSD to the United States.
So not only was the goal of this program brainwashing, but also reprogramming to get the victim to do anything the CIA wanted, even assassinations, and without the victim having the slightest memory of what he had done. The United States was concerned during the Korean War, where many American prisoners of war were confessing to the Koreans that they had actually used germ warfare on their country and were apologetic. Over 7,000 POWs petitioned the U.S. to end the war, and 21 of the soldiers even refused to return to the United States after the war. Well, Washington thought all of this was because of brainwashing techniques, which they thought had been used on the soldiers, but that was not the case. However, it did not prevent the U.S. from starting this aggressive and inhumane program to learn how to control humans by brainwashing them. Officially, the MKUltra program ended when information started seeping out after Olson's case was finally looked into. You know, he was the guy I introduced to you at the beginning of the program, the scientist who was set up to look like he committed suicide, but were most likely killed by the same CIA that he had worked for. It seemed that after he was given an LSD dosage that he had a bit of a conscience and couldn't take the torture to others any longer. And Gottlieb and others, even higher up, knew that he needed to be silenced before he exposed what they were doing. Much about this program came to light 20 years after Olson's death. And because of the public exposure, the program was officially ended. However, there are those who say it never really ended, but just took on other forms. Let's get my guests involved in this discussion.
James Martinez is a media ecologist, radio talk show host, and pioneer in radio broadcasting and behavior modification. Born in San Diego, California, he's an accredited member of the Press for American Media Distribution. Martinez has been a consultant for True TV's Conspiracy Theory and has consulted for Emmy Award-winning actor Ian Bailey for a show entitled Imagine This.
Well, thank you so much, James, for being with us. I'd like to start off with this. How would you describe MKUltra to our audience?
MKUltra was brought over from Europe during World War II, where they were perfecting behavior modification using child abuse and satanic cult ritual. Those were the melting pots for what was to be used. Originally, most people think MKUltra had to do with being able to utilize behavioral software to override the conscious mind of an individual that was pre-programmed for instance, assassination. But it wasn't only for assassination. It was used for political purposes as well. And it was done through ritualistic abuse originally. That's how it started. These ritual abusive techniques were used to create deep-seated trauma within the psyche, and then around the trauma, build and program personalities for certain functions to be used. MKUltra, originally, what people know it from is being able to take the free will of an individual, any individual, and get them to commit murder without them knowing it or even remembering it, and carrying it out skillfully and discreetly so that it could be utilized for political purposes, for altering the chessboard pieces on the grand chessboard, so to speak. That's what it was for originally, but it has far more profound effects today.
I mean, that's really mind-boggling what you said. How successful would you say that program was?
Very successful, very successful. In 1990, when I was working with Walter Boert, we had and interviewed hundreds of people that survived ritualistic satanic abuse. Some were in the private sector, some were in the military, and some were utilized in Vietnam for assassination. And Walter Boert originally, what inspired him to write the book was discovery of deep-seated amnesia with a lot of the soldiers that came back from Vietnam. And he was always very sensitive to the whole idea of warfare as a whole. But what he really, really was concerned about was the battle over the mind. And we knew in 1990 that that's where the high ground was, and the end of the road, and we've reached that now. We knew in 1990 that free will, freedom of speech, and cognitive liberty would be the biggest issues on the planet. And this today is where we're at, because we are now in the process of merging our central nervous system to technology. And this is, we're at a very, very dangerous place for the whole human race at this point.
Well, besides the drugs used in the MKUltra program, I saw in an earlier interview that you had done, you talked about child abuse techniques also used. Can you expand on that for me?
When you have individuals in society that get off on having power over others as a mechanism of an effect of satisfaction to the psyche. Most of the time it's because they're disassociated from previous childhood that they experienced as a youngster. Whether it was sanctioned by the government or done through a program, these type of individuals come into power, and then what ends up happening is they have no empathy or even feeling for anything outside of themselves, because they've been fractured themselves. And everybody has heard the term, you know, those that have been abused, abuse. And this is what we have today. And it was weaponized, MKUltra, and all the programs associated with it, MK Naomi and all the others, were utilized against the public to capture America and then the world.
Well, you just mentioned about mind control techniques transcending. And you've also said about the role technology plays in all of this, technology and media. Let's talk about this a little bit. What do you mean exactly?
Marshall McLuhan wrote Understanding Media. He spoke before the Bilderbergs and the most powerful people in the world on the effects of technology on human perception. And this is a very important piece of the puzzle in understanding mind control, is being understand the what's known today as media ecology, which is the study of human perception and its marriage to technology. And we knew in the early 90s, when they began to outer the inner, that's it called, of the central nervous system outside of the body via the computer, the media extension of our central nervous system, our handheld computers, that was the beginning of the end, and human perception would be altered forever because of that, all of which was planned by DARPA and the military industrial complex quite some time ago. So if people are trying to understand how this functions, they really need to study the works of Marshall McLuhan and other media theorists in the communications field, so they understand how human perception is altered through media environments, such as the television, the book, the computer, any media extension of the human psyche alters it. And they're aware of that. All the intelligence agencies were all told this in the 50s. They figured it all out, and they slowly utilized technology to alter and steer obsolescence and human perception and attention span, because now we're in an attention economy. And that's been offset by the amplification of our central nervous system to put us into an anticipation state all the time of receiving a text, receiving a message, receiving. And this is ADHD is an effect of the post-information environment and the computer, which we spoke about in Operation Mind Control.
I mean, if what you're saying is true in your perspective, what can be done to counter these measures?
It's incredibly damaging. I have kind of stayed away from a lot of the news, as I did a media fast by design to unplug myself from everything. And that's what you need to do to have contrast and being able to survive in a post-information environment, where everything now is inverted, information is moving at the speed of light, everything changes every second, human perception is being engineered and designed, and we've got the birth of the cybernetic being now, which is completely, totally different than what was previously there 5-10 years ago. We have different humans now. The days of the organic biological entity that we call a human being, it's gone. It's been re-engineered. Now it's being done genetically. So mind control now is not just taking over the mind, it's taking over the entire biology of an individual and re-engineering it for either extermination or for some policy to support the state. So the most important, not discussed issue of our time right now is the liberation of the human condition and what it is to be human, because a lot of us don't know anymore, because we've been so damaged by the technology that's been inserted into the public. I mean, you've spoken to enough people and watched culture close enough yourself to see that what's been done to our children just by the interfacing of technology in their development years. What, you know, a lot of children grew up with a cell phone in their hand. That's a completely different reality and a different nervous system. Their nervous systems have been retuned for something else. They've been retuned to blend in so that their memories and personality will be on the cloud in the future. So the big discussion is, and should be all over the world, is where are we going, what are we doing, and why are we doing it based upon a few people's idea of what a human being should be.
It's really amazing what you're saying. Do you have any final thoughts?
Freedom of your mind and the liberation of the human condition, this is the high ground of the military-industrial complex and the New World Order. And if you do not, and people do not, address these issues, now you're not going to have free will. You're not going to have freedom. You're not going to have a right to rule and create a future that you want. This is, a lot of people have sacrificed to bring this information to the public a long time ago, and people have really put themselves out there because they know at this moment in our history, this is the crossroads of either the beginning and liberation of the human condition or the complete and total slavery of it. So I would suggest everybody start to examine it and take a real close look at it and start taking action from themselves. Don't expect any elected employee to do anything because they've failed miserably, totally, completely. Specifically, I'm talking about the United States. Take it upon the individual self to take control of their own reality, take full responsibility, and then move ahead. That's what I suggest. That's my leading party message for everybody.
Well, thank you very much, James Martinez, for a very interesting discussion. Well, listening to Mr. Martinez can only make us wonder how controlled all of our minds are right now. We're also connected to our screens. Is this the new form of brainwashing? Well, the original sin of torturing people and destroying thousands of lives was really never addressed. There were some families who were compensated, but the majority were not. And of course, the victims can never, ever be fully compensated. Now, this brings up the question that although the CIA says its MKUltra program no longer exists, what would stop it from using other inhumane techniques to reach a goal? It used biological warfare in the past and never really had to pay for it. What does that mean for us today? Are they in the business of creating germ warfare? It was said that the MKUltra program was so extensive that it even developed biological weapons in the form of aerosol sprays, and that all types of poisons and drugs were created, combined, and tested on humans. And that was then, in the 1950s and 60s. What about now?
March 16th, 2018. The U.S. government's Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, commonly known as DARPA, announces a bold initiative to develop what they call next-generation non-surgical neurotechnology. It is designed to allow the human brain to directly interface with machines.
We know that DARPA is exploring human-machine interfaces that include direct connections between the brain and outside systems. That's been from the beginning of DARPA's information technology mission, and it continues to this day. DARPA has created some of the most influential technologies of all time, things that we use and take for granted every day, including the project that became the internet. They've created self-driving cars, stealth technology, GPS that fits in your pocket. That's DARPA's specialty, to imagine the future and create it.
A new technology that is actually very much on the verge of being a reality that is being fielded is we could have a sensor maybe on the surface of our head or maybe implanted somewhere in our body, in our brain or something that allows us to interact directly with our communications gear, our processing gear, our weapon systems, and so on. But now imagine we take that technology and we can control robots at a distance with it. Even fly drones, you put this sensor on and you think the right way and you can increase the speed of the fan by thinking and controlling that thought with direct-to-mind or mind-machine interfacing. With that type of capability, you could control all sorts of buttons and mechanisms in equipment.
Mind-machine interfaces will have many applications in both civilian and military life. But there are those who believe that this same technology could also be used by DARPA as a new form of mind control. Like their counterparts at the CIA, DARPA-funded researchers have spent decades investigating how the human mind can be altered. In 1965, DARPA launched Project Pandora, which studied the possibility of using microwave radiation to control human behavior. The project reportedly ended in 1969, but DARPA's investigation of how machines can affect and possibly control the brain continues to this day.
750,000 dollars. That's how much the Olson family was compensated for the assassination of Frank Olson by the CIA back in 1975, which is ironic because it seems the only murder that was compensated and apologized for in this manner was the murder of a scientist who himself was guilty of creating bioweapons responsible for the murder of many others. Well, in Canada alone, of the 300 victims who filed for compensation, 250 were turned down with the excuse of not having been affected badly enough or for filing too late or for the lack of medical records, which the CIA had conveniently destroyed. But these victims are only a fraction of those who were severely injured and killed by the similar scientific experiments on human beings without their knowledge and consent. Because in addition to these human guinea pigs and the some 7,000 U.S. soldiers used for these experiments, there were thousands more who paid the price for the projects approved by the American government. People in Korea and elsewhere who received the final product which resulted from these experiments. The most voiceless victims of the CIA's biological warfare were these non-Americans whose suffering didn't seem to be an area of concern as they were citizens of the so-called enemy countries. You see, the most dangerous brainwashing method is not that which was done using LSD and other drugs and terror techniques, but the media propaganda that dictates to people every single day which lives should matter and which ones are simply all the expendables. Perhaps it's time for us to unplug ourselves from all the noise from the screens and give our minds time to process what is reality and what is a creation of cyberspace. Be able to discern the real from the created is the test of the day. And depending on how well we score, it can help determine if we can free our minds or simply behave like a puppet on a string, giving in to the whims and directions of others on the web. Well, with that, it brings us to the end of this week's show, and we hope you will be joining us for our next Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashmi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye for now.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, brothers and sisters, dear listeners, welcome to Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. I am your host, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi. Another key of life is how to seek proper medication, and especially when it is natural and not a chemical. The Ahl Bayt alayhim as-salam, they give us a lot of prescriptions of how to cure some of the diseases. For example, Al-Imam Sadiq alayhi as-salam, he says, obviously a person first complained to him about a fever. The Imam salamullah alayhi said to him, Inna ahlu baytin la natanawalu illa bi idafati al-ma' al-barid yusabbu alayna wa aklu tufah. That we are the household of the Prophet. If we get a fever, we wash with cold water and we eat apples. So two remedies for fever is to wash with cold water and to eat plenty of apples. And also the Imam alayhi salam says, كُلُ التُفَاحِ فَإِنَّهُ يُطْفُؤُ الْحَرَارَةِ وَيُبَرُدُ الْجَوْفِ وَيُثُبُ الْحُمَّةِ. Eat apples, for it kills and lowers the temperature and cools you from the inside and gets rid of fever. These are some of the magical elements of apples. This is what it does. You know, we say an apple a day keeps the doctor away. This is exactly why. Because the Imam says it is a remedy for fever. Also, the Imam alayhi salam said, Ishaq al-sukkar, grind and try to make sugar into a powder. ثم أمخذه بالماء, then mix it with water. وَاشْرَبْهُ عَلَى الرِّيقِ, and drink it early in the morning before anything else. وَعِنْدَ الْمَسَاءِ, and at night. So in the morning, first thing in the morning and first thing at night, sugar, make it into powder, mix it with water and drink it. The Imam says this is also good and healthy for a fever, especially during the month of winter, especially during the season of winter, where people get fevers and cold. These are a few things one need to keep in mind. Also, another hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, he says, Al-mishtu lil-ra'si yathubu bil-waba'. And this is strange. He says, combing your hair, just with combing your hair with a comb, he says, it pushes sickness away. The person says to him, as a reply, he says, وَمَا الْوَبَأُ, what is the sickness that you talk about? He says, الْحُمَّ. He says, the fever. So if a person gets a fever, let them take care of their hair and style it more often. Because apparently, according to the Imam alayhi salam, it does help with fever. So having a messy hair is not going to help. Combing the hair, fixing it, styling it, it should fix you and it should give you at least a better treatment from the fever. What happens to the head if it's massaged while a person has a fever? And obviously, those who are in this field should give us an answer. Let us take a short break and then we come back right after.
Ayatollah Javadi Omoli, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafati, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When when growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Keys of Life. We are looking at medication to certain diseases through the words of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, which is another key of life. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, he gives a medication to malaria. Now, malaria existed before and still exists now, and it's one of the deadly diseases that we have. The Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, they gave the medication to it. Sadly, in the world that we live in, everybody's going chemical and no one is going herbal, or at least, you know, the traditional medicine. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, he says if a person has malaria, all they have to do is they have to eat what we call faludaj in Arabic. Faludaj is a type of sweet that is made from starch, sugar, mixed with honey. And then the Imam says, وَيُكْثُرُ زَعْفَرَانَ, and he adds plenty of za'faran to it. And وَلَا يُؤْكَلْ فِي يَامِهَا غَيْرَ, that in this day, he eats nothing but this sweet faludaj, which is made from starch, sugar, and honey, and plenty of saffron. He says, this person who does that and who eats this, then he should be cured from malaria. Now, the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, they are the experts before anyone else. So if any person, God forbid, has malaria, then that should help. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, again, he talks about hujama, as we call it in English, cupping. Now with cupping, is when blood is extracted from the body. The, you know, the black, red, dirty blood gets extracted. And it's a very important practice in the Islamic world and in the Islamic culture. And the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, they greatly emphasize on the fact that we need to do hujama. So the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam says, احتجموا إذا هاج بكم الدم. Do cupping, do this hujama, when the blood in your body becomes, increases. فَإِنَّ الدَّمْ رُبَّمَا تَبِيهُ بِصَاحِبِهِ فَيَقْتَلُهُ, that the blood sometimes when it increases in the body, he says it might kill that person. So in order for me and you to make sure that our blood system flows naturally and smoothly and there's not an increase of blood, we have to do hujama from time to time. Even if it's every 6 months, even at least if it's, you know, once a year, but it needs to be done for the benefits of it. Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi as-salam, he says, Al-hujamatu tusihhu al-badan wa tashuddu al-aql. That doing hujama, that cupping, he says it makes the body healthy as well as strengthens the intellect. So it does wonders, not just for the body, but also for the mind as well. Imam al-Baqir alayhi as-salam, he says, طب العربي في ثلاث. The medicine of the Arabs are in three things. شرطه الحجام والحقنة وآخر الدواء الكي. Three things he considers them to be the medicine of the Arabs. One is that the person who does hujama, his needle or his knife has to be very sharp. And he says الحقنة, when a person takes injections, there are certain injections for certain diseases, or a form of purification, that also means الحقنة. And also when using fire and heat to treat certain diseases, especially if they are on the outside. So the Imam Salamullah alayhi, he says medicine lies and revolves around these three things. Now, also we have many ahadith that says the medicine of the Arabs in seven, some have said the medicine of the Arabs in four, and so on and so forth. But we'll leave it up to here. Inshallah, we will continue in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams, hear the children scream, sweet.
was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.